Welcome to the Data Democratization Podcast, where we bring you the best frontline stories of data and data privacy. I'm Alexandra Ebert, Mostly AI's Chief Trust Officer. And here is my co-host, Jeffrey Dobin, privacy expert and lawyer from Duality Technologies. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Alexandra. What's up? Good to be back here. So where do we travel to this time?
Well, it's only virtually, but we will be talking to somebody from Stockholm, Sweden.
Stockholm, Sweden. Wow. So when I think of Stockholm, one of the first things that come to mind is one of my favorite apps, Spotify. Obviously, they're super data-driven, always making great recommendations for the songs I should listen to. I actually visited their office once in New York City. It's a huge office.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, filled with obviously recording studios for all the artists that come through, and then pictures of these artists all over the walls. It's really inspiring. And then the other favorite thing that I found when I visited there was all the amazing food. Obviously, I'd love to go back in real life because traveling there over Zoom just isn't the same.
Yeah, you're right.
So today, you're going to hear from one of Spotify's senior data scientists, Ryan McCabe. Ryan is extremely experienced. He has an exceptional understanding of the business side of things at Spotify. And over the years, he's specialized in building customer-facing digital products and has practical advice to offer to really any size organization, from startups to mature businesses looking to jumpstart their data-driven capabilities.
Absolutely. And Ryan also has some advice for those looking to make a career in data science. So this episode really is for everyone.
It sure is. Let's jump right into things.
Good morning, Ryan. It's great to have you on the show. Can you share a little bit with our readers? Where does this podcast find you, and also a little bit about your background?
Hey, Alexandra, and thanks for having me. I'm actually in Stockholm, Sweden right now, in my home office. And it's actually a relatively beautiful morning here in Stockholm, which is like a big bonus. A little bit about myself. As you introduced me, my name is Ryan McCabe, and I'm a data scientist currently at Spotify in Stockholm, of course. And my background is with consumer-facing applications and digital products.
Understood. And where does your passion for data science come from, and how did you arrive at Spotify?
I think it arrived from back in my studies. I studied economics, and more along the lines of like behavioral economics and economic policy. And it was just very interesting to me that you could measure human behavior at such a scale, and you could experiment and have impact and really see how these things play out. So I think that's really where it comes from. And it turns out it's like a pretty useful tool in the marketplace. So
it was a bit. Absolutely. And how did you arrive at Spotify?
Through a recruiter. So this is how these things work. They reached out when I was working at Prezi. Mm-hmm. I was there for 3 years. Prezi's Zooming presentation software in Budapest, where I was located previously.
So lots of experience with startups, or now pretty big organizations, of course. So with all your experience in supporting the development of digital products at startups, are there some key takeaways that also large organizations like big banks, financial institutions could benefit from? Any tips that you have for them?
I've stepped up each move in my career to a bigger place. And Spotify is the biggest place that I've worked at so far. We have over 5,000 employees now. Which for me is quite big, coming from Prezi, which had hundreds of employees. And then before that, Brickflow, which was like a small startup in Budapest. Mm-hmm. But I think it really depends on how much you want to spend on data science. I think you see plenty of tech companies that spend way too much and spend way too much too early. And you have plenty of older industry or more traditional industries that could really, really benefit from better analytics. But it takes a huge upfront investment to get going. So it's not just hiring a bunch of data scientists. You have to have data processing and ways to collect data around your business. And so, yeah, the first advice is nothing like organizational. It's more around what are you measuring and what should you be measuring, mm-hmm. and how do you get to be measuring that thing?
Yeah. Yeah. You said something interesting that you think that many organizations spend too much on data science too early. How would an organization know whether it's the right time or whether it's still too early to invest in data science capabilities?
Well, if you're not already measuring things, then it's too early. Okay. So a lot of, I have done some consulting for small startups, mm-hmm. While working my regular jobs. And usually what I say to them is, okay, good thing you've hired me so I can tell you not to get a data scientist. And a lot of the work that I end up doing is working with some of their engineers to start saying, okay, what would some data pipelines look like? Or what data do we have and what data do we need? Which is very different than a lot of the expectations when they try to hire on a data scientist. So,
yeah.
And it's really hard for a data scientist to be productive in an environment where there's not much data, right? Or it's very difficult to access. So this is my experience in startups. Someone from their board says, we want more data at the board meetings, and tell them to hire a data scientist, but like the people on the board don't get it. So it's really up to the CEO or the founders of the company to say, well, hold on a bit. We have to, this is a longer term investment, especially if it's like a product which isn't a core digital product.
Yeah, of course. Right? That's definitely one challenge I can imagine. But when you mentioned that startups, of course, first have to build these data pipelines, when we look at some of the large enterprises that are interested in starting with data science, AI, we oftentimes also find organizations that not yet have done all this preparational work of having the data in a cleaned and reliable format. So what's your experience with larger enterprises if they want to tap into data science? What are the kind of homework points they should accomplish first?
Yeah, I mean, you should do an audit of what you have today, mm-hmm. and then what would a good MVP look like? And this isn't just to like building out your data. This is for kind of everything. Yeah. You could use this for your life. I'm not a life coach, but it's generally good to, okay, where am I today and where do I want to be?
Yeah.
And go from there. And there's a lot of folks out there that are very willing to take your money to help you make these transformations. And they're not all at, Boston Consulting or McKinsey. So there's plenty of small consultancies that can help, like embed with your team and automatically embed best practices and help you avoid some of those pitfalls. But also, just like we're in a world where the cloud is pretty advanced now, and you have these really big players like Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, and they have done this, you know, probably tens of thousands of times by now. Yeah. So it's definitely easier to get started in this space now than it was back when I was kind of trying to implement solutions for smaller startups.
Yeah, definitely. I think this cloud technologies definitely make it easy, and all the experience that has been made by now. Can you share a few of the data science and data best practices that you see within Spotify? Are there some elements that other organizations could learn from?
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty. So Spotify definitely has the best like data culture of any company that I've been at or heard about. But we're also like really willing to spend a lot on it. Yeah. And I know that's not a reality for a lot of companies. But I think a lot of it, like you can have organizational maturity around data without spending a lot on data science or analytics. And I think so a lot of folks try to go out and buy a seasoned manager, analytics manager. But I'd say like, if you have one really performant and experienced individual contributor, like a really, really senior staff data scientist that also happens to be extroverted and willing to work with stakeholders. And I mean, they don't necessarily have to be extroverted, but like really passionate about getting the organization to ask better questions and like experienced enough to be able to provide them with tools to maybe answer their own questions, depending on the organizational scale, or be able to bring on more junior folks and really like shape them.
To help our listeners better understand, can you give an example of what would be a really good question to ask a data scientist versus which need maybe some improvement and are not yet ready to be answered by a data scientist?
Yeah, so a quite common bad question to ask a data scientist is, how do I meet my KPI? Right. So you'll find this with stakeholders all the time, where their performance is evaluated by some KPI and they want to meet it. Right. And it's pretty rare that you'll find performant, ambitious people that. So I guess the analogy is like we're all rats in the maze. Mm-hmm. And there's like 95% of the rats in the maze are just trying to kind of cut through the maze. And there's not that many people that are like, oh shit, I'm in a maze. Like what's going on? And kind of crawl over the top. But there are some rats that figure it out. Anyway. So, I mean, I think a lot of a data scientist's job in any organization is like, getting better questions out of the stakeholder by like reformulating it for them.
Yeah. Right?
There's the question you hear, like, I want to meet my KPI. And it's just like, okay, well, what's the most sustainable way to do that? Right. So let's say it's somebody that has some revenue KPI. I think that's quite common.
Yeah.
And let's say it's a subscription business. Well, you can really boost short-term revenue by increasing prices, especially like on the renewal base. Mm-hmm. But in a year, you're going to like have a lot of trouble, right? And yeah, there's all sorts of tricks that you could do, right? Really, really getting the stakeholder to think a little bit more holistically about their product or the thing that they have control over. And make sure that their incentives on the KPI are more aligned with the company overall performance or more aligned with their performance in 1 or 2 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Understood. So a holistic perspective and asking better questions. One other thing I would be interested to hear from you, we oftentimes hear it from prospects we talk with, that data scientists, on the one hand, you already mentioned it, struggle to get access to relevant data, but also that in some organizations, some manager decides, okay, we want to move forward with artificial intelligence without already having a specific use case in mind. And then sometimes they experience challenges with the business stakeholders of exciting them for the possibilities of AI and really finding a meaningful project to work on. What's your experience on that? Did all companies that you joined already have an established data science team, or was it also some like change management that was necessary and lots of people work to get everybody within the organization on board?
Right. So I think Spotify is really the first company that I was at that really, really had consistent machine learning in production. Mm-hmm. And so I like the common joke is with machine learning and AI, everyone, it's like high school sex, right? So like everyone's talking about it. Everyone's saying that they're doing it, but no one's actually doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the case still.
Spotify is the cool guy from the high school kids.
Well, maybe Spotify has the scale and the money to do it and the need, right? Like our competitors all have the same catalog as us, all the same songs. And, you know, when there's millions of pieces of content and one user and a limited amount of space on your screen, on your home screen, mm-hmm. then yeah, that is a problem which requires not only analytics, but production level machine learning.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of problems which people have that could be solved with some good logging, some good data, and a 25-year-old that knows SQL.
Yeah. So Gartner, for example, I think it was Accenture, said that I think 70-80% of C-level executives actually want to scale AI within their organization, also have their KPIs attached to it, but fail to do that. What are the secrets of Spotify? Why does it work so well within Spotify to really have AI and machine learning in production? And why do all these other big organizations struggle to accomplish the same?
I mean, because it's a need and a strategic bet that we like have to have this, right? Yeah. You could imagine if it was only a search, how would you discover music?
Yeah.
You'd have to do it kind of the old-fashioned way. I mean, I remember as a kid going to the library and judging albums by their cover and then popping them in with some headphones like on the wall. And listening to it out, like it took forever to participate in any kind of music discovery. So, I mean, that was just a need of the business. But I think there are consistent things that are underserved in businesses. After going to Spotify, I realized like, oh, maybe we should have solved that with this kind of machine learning when I was at Prezi, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So any time where you have like a lot of pieces of content or a lot of things and you have to show a limited set of them to a customer, then there's an opportunity for machine learning there.
Yeah.
So and there are plenty of other opportunities that are not around that. Fraud is a very, very common example. These are things that are helped by machine learning, but like 99% of the business machine learning cases are not really like AI. They're not, you don't need neural networks. You don't need even reinforcement learning. A lot of times you just need some offline random forest and an interpretable model that you can kind of dissect and learn about.
Yeah. So if you come back to the AI and machine learning use cases, can you share about one particular use case that you find super exciting and what the impact of this machine learning algorithm that was developed was today?
Yeah, so, I mean, I find the very boring use cases interesting.
Okay, why is that?
Because I mean, a lot of times they can have a lot of impact, or a lot of times it's not something that you would necessarily think of, but it's a very good thing to apply it to.
Do you see this in the industry that sometimes people want to attempt the more like sexy problems and a little bit reluctant to look into the more boring ones, and therefore opportunities?
Of course, like I mean, I've based a lot of my career success on choosing projects that people shy away from and hate or the ones that they've failed at before.
Okay.
So you can imagine in any organization where there's like a lot of data scientists and a lot of really good problems, there's like kind of competition for those problems. This is natural.
Yeah.
And I think this is good general advice as well, maybe in life. When others zig, maybe you should give some consideration to Zach. So one of those areas for me at Spotify was messaging, mm-hmm. Push messaging. So I looked at some data and I realized that, wow, only a very limited, like, part of the population is actually getting push messages. And that was because of the way that we kind of designed the system in the organization. We had kind of a self-serve model, and then marketers could go in and like design a push message for a campaign, mm-hmm. and then send those. And it turns out they're all targeting the same people. And the people that benefit from these are not necessarily the people that get targeted. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, well, it seems like we have an opportunity here. And like 90% of the opportunity wasn't the machine learning opportunity. 90% of the opportunity was getting, making sure that everyone who wants messaging is getting like a standard minimal treatment of that. So like a message a week,
mm-hmm.
right? Because this is a product or a feature that can be annoying.
Yeah.
And if people are getting a message a week, then they're getting it frequent enough to that if they don't want it, they can opt out. And that way we're standardizing the treatment and we can really like measure the effect experimentally.
Mm-hmm.
And but how to choose which message to give to which user, and that's the machine learning problem, right? So basically we gathered all the existing messages that everyone's ever sent and then like did some user research, mm-hmm. figured out what people want or what they say that they want that they're not getting, make sure we have those things, maybe improve the UX of it, right? There's like new capabilities from the platforms now, iOS and Android. You can have images in your notifications now, which is nice, and some other cool things around settings. And basically, we ended up with that kind of similar problem where you have a user and a message to send and a lot of messages to choose from. So you have to sort them somehow. And for this, we chose to use a reinforcement learning model, multi-arm bandit problem. So for part of the population, we're giving a random order, sort order of messages, and then we're measuring some kind of outcome. And then for the rest of the population, we're giving like an optimized sort of those messages.
Okay, and what was the impact of these new initiatives? So did you see anything in how frequently people then use Spotify?
Yeah, of course. So they use it more. And they, as time goes on, people tend to interact with the messages more, mm-hmm. which is like a very good sign. And then like when we take the messaging away, we can see that. So a lot of times when you do something annoying, that brings a user back in. Like let's say if we sent a push message every single day, it's like pain when you look at it on the experimental like charts. And if you keep giving it, then it looks great, right? But this long term, it's a horrible strategy. And if you took it away after giving a message every day for 2 weeks, what you would see is like a big substitution effect. So let's say, so you give it every day for 2 weeks and then take it away on day, you know, 14, the test group engagement is going to be way lower than that of the control. So we had a great positive treatment effect, and it's long term, and that's fantastic. But also, there is no need for any like huge organization around deciding who gets what message, or some complicated spreadsheet, or some gatekeeper around messaging. I mean, like, it's a very simple system, And if any marketer wants to, or a product person wants, for that matter, wants to send out a message, they can. And there's a system that deals with it, and it's there, right? And if it's a good message, it'll get more exposure. And if it's a bad message, it won't.
Okay, but it makes their lives easier. I would also like to learn more about Spotify Wrapped for our listeners who don't know exactly what Spotify Wrapped is. I think at the end of the year, you get an overview of your listening habits for 1 year. And in 2020, we had this one decade of listening habits, since Spotify is one of the services that is around for quite some time, where you worked with a tremendous amount of data, but still managed to spend significantly less on the processing. What were the learnings from this project and what was accomplished there?
Yeah, so that's an interesting one. It's like one of our most beloved it's organic marketing.
Yeah.
Think about it. But you can imagine processing all that data for every user going back a year is like a very cumbersome task.
Absolutely.
And I didn't work directly on this, but a team in my organization did in New York, some good friends of mine. And yeah, they were able to optimize something that was very expensive in a data flow job, and were able to bring this experience like much, much cheaper to users. And the thing is like a lot of these problems, which I describe at Spotify, isn't something that you could go take to your startup and apply. It's only because we have 350 or whatever it is now, million monthly active users,
yeah.
Right? So, for example, that messaging use case, that doesn't work at 95% of applications. But also, you don't have a bunch of people in different parts of the organization wanting to send a message or having a need to send a message, mm-hmm. You know. Every person that wants to send the message is in the same room as you are. So, and I guess similar with that one data flow job, right? So like looking at costs, it's very easy to say, okay, what's our most expensive job? And if you're a big scaled company, then it can save significant amount of money if you're able to optimize that.
Yeah, absolutely. If you say that things like that won't work at many organizations because they are not in this lucky position of having 350 million users, what would you say are the low-hanging AI and machine learning fruits for, let's say, many of our listeners come from the banking or insurance space, large organizations that, of course, have digital banking apps and other services. What would you say are the low-hanging fruits there? What should you look first into?
I think the lowest hanging fruit is data accessibility, mm-hmm. Right? So when Spotify moved over to the cloud, which was not that long ago, actually, it was before I joined, but which was 3 years ago, but not too long before I joined. The usage of data went up like a bunch. And of course, that's expensive, but it's also like a very, very good thing, yeah. Right? We weren't just measuring the counts of things. We were measuring the rates and the rates between groups. And so the level of sophistication of the questions like increased dramatically with those costs. So that's like very good cost. And a lot of organizations, data is very, very much siloed and not very open, or there's no like automated process around this. You have to ask somebody to get access to this, and then they have to check their email, and then
it takes months and you still don't have your data. This is actually the business problem we solve with our synthetic data software, that we oftentimes hear from data scientists that have all these great ideas. They wait like 3 months, 4 months to get access to data. And with synthetic data, it gets much faster and enables them to be innovative. So getting access to data.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is a real problem, and you can't do any kind of like machine optimization if you don't have access to data.
Yeah. Okay. So having this in place, but coming back to Spotify and these impressive amounts of data that get processed there, how do you protect user privacy?
Well, we follow the law. So, I mean, I don't have much exposure to this like directly. Okay. I have teams who I have a great amount of trust in that really, really make sure that we're following the law, like to the letter.
Yeah.
And I mean, the world has just changed, like post GDPR, yeah. Right? I used to know what my user ID was. I don't anymore. That's how I would check logs. It's like go into my account, click around, and then like go into the data and check. And now I make an anonymized test user and fake user and have to use that. So I think like this is really the job of not data scientists to think about which data should be accessible. I'd say it's more on not to shift the responsibility to users, but it's more on what the public wants. And then also what the business kind of really needs to provide their service. So I think like if you asked folks, yeah, do you like having personalization in Spotify or any app, they'd say, yeah, of course. It would be pretty useless without personalization. And then if you ask them, do you like that company X is like going through your data? The answer tends to be no.
Yeah.
I think Spotify is really lucky in this case where we don't really need much else than what you listen to. Like it turns out what you listen to is a good predictor of what you're going to listen to. Right. So we don't have that problem. Like we're not going to track you off of the platform because like the most valuable information is just what music you listen to or what podcasts you're listening to. But I know there's plenty of organizations and big tech companies that, you know, are towing a very fine line when it comes to privacy. And I think it's like not only something that they should wait for lawmakers to address, because a lot of cases they're very slow, and they might overreach in some places and underreach in others. I really think, and this is a little bit above my pay grade, but I really think it's up to these market leaders in tech to help educate policymakers and really be a little bit forward in what regulation should be in place around data privacy. It's also highly controversial. So you can see that Apple has differentiated itself in the marketplace by saying, hey, we're going to protect your data and we're not going to, you know, sell it. We're going to keep it safe. Yeah. And that's a very good thing. It's something that I value personally. And I think it's something that their consumer base values, yeah. Which is
something that many people value. And I'm actually happy to see that we are currently in an age where people really appreciate it and demand it, that their privacy is protected. And therefore, I think it's one of the ways forward that organizations really figure out ways to find this balance of, on the one hand, protecting the privacy, and then, of course, delivering great customer experience and the services that are really helpful and beneficial for the consumer base.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think many, many organizations are luckily moving in the right direction. And what I want to touch upon, again, you mentioned that it's really also a collaborative effort of getting data scientists access to data. So on the one hand, of course, users should be in charge of what they want, what they don't want. But did I understand correctly that also within Spotify, there are teams that really are looking into how everything you and your data scientists need to accomplish the great work you do have access to?
Yeah, I mean, so we have an internal system for a data scientist to go and check what's up with the data set, what is the, like, level of personal data in this data set. But like I said, most of the products and services we're producing don't require any personal data. Like for an email, to send an email, of course you need that literal email string. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't need that level of data to count things, right? Yeah. Or check A-B tests. So I mean, I'm interested in how a change that we ship affects, you know, hip hop listeners versus classical music listeners, yeah. Right? Which is something that is like huge groups of people, and is actually a lot more useful.
Yeah.
If you want to like iterate on a product, than what individual email addresses, or I don't know. I'm even struggling to find an example because it's not very useful.
Completely agree. I think it's really the patterns and the insights that you can find about a broader group of people, as opposed to really being that granular and looking into one individual. Because after all, you want to recommend several people which music to listen to, and figure out what you can learn from others to make these recommendations. So can imagine that this, of course, makes privacy protection easy, and I think is one of the ways how we can really accomplish this balance of, okay, on the one hand, using it not that privacy sensitive information, but still delivering outstanding customer experience and great music recommendation, as in the case of Spotify. So really impressive what you guys are doing here. At the end of our sessions, we usually ask or play a little this or that game. Just answer with the first things that come to your mind. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Wonderful, wonderful. So our first question would be data science or statistics? It's a tricky one.
Can I elaborate? Data science. I'd say data science. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that the skill set is much more broad.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I work in the product side, right? Mm-hmm. In R&D. And so basically I have a lot of the skills that a product manager might have because it's required for my job, but I also have these data skills. And I think that is much more broad of a skill set than a statistician. And when I'm looking to hire data scientists, I'm not just looking for somebody that can tell me about confidence intervals and you know, I'm looking for somebody that can connect the dots and can ask like really good questions and be able to answer them themselves.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially with what you shared, that it's oftentimes the job of the data scientist to educate the business people on how to rephrase the questions, that data science actually can help.
Absolutely. So it's definitely data science, and it's here to stay. And if you're a statistician, that's great.
But get some product skills.
Or some other skills, some complementary skills, so you can apply what you know.
For example, what would be a good...
I mean, business in general, like whatever industry knowledge is very, very useful. I don't think it would be very good for me to be like a data scientist in the telecom space or oil and gas. Right. Like I have specialized in industry, which is like consumer facing digital products. And it would be a big learning curve for me to enter a different space and be effective. But like I can apply the knowledge that I've built over the years about consumers and digital products to anything, or subscription models for that. And these are complicated things, and more complicated than often like meets the eye. So yeah, it's really important to have domain knowledge. And it's often one of like the common mistakes that people make with hiring is underemphasize the importance of domain knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's a very valuable takeaway for our listeners that are in the process of building their AI teams and data science teams. Okay, but next questions, desktop or mobile?
Mobile, of course. I mean, like everything's on mobile now, and it's still eating everything up. I mean, I spend a lot of time on desktop. I think it's more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think training reinforcement models on your smartphone still is a little bit challenging, I could imagine.
Yeah, but mobile is here to stay.
Yeah, so. Next question, house or techno?
Techno.
Techno, okay. Apple or Google?
Google.
Why Google?
Because they're our cloud service provider.
So cloud service is more important than the privacy aspects of Apple.
I mean, Apple's a great company. So is Google.
Yeah.
But
for the scientists, the cloud capabilities, of course, are promising, I could imagine. And last question, forest or beaches?
Well, I'm in Sweden. I can't say anything against the forest because some trees out here that will hear me.
Okay, yeah.
Definitely like prefer the sunshine.
Okay, yes. Then let's hope that we soon will be able to travel to beautiful beaches again. But thank you so much, Ryan. It was really interesting to talk with you. And I think there's so many valuable key takeaways for our listeners. So thank you very much for taking the time.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Ryan is awesome. And Spotify sounds like a really fun place to work. We can learn a lot from how they do things over there.
We sure can. Let's pull together our most important takeaways, shall we?
Let's do it. So number one, sort out your data infrastructure before you start the actual data science. It's very difficult for a data scientist to work in an environment where there is no data or it's difficult to access. Set your team up for success by auditing the data you have and figuring out a smart MVP approach to your infrastructure.
Good points. Number two, a single business-minded individual contributor who is passionate about making the organization data-driven can have a bigger impact than signing on huge consultancy firms. A seasoned data scientist can automatically embed best practices in your team, and she or he gets your business stakeholders to ask better questions, which is one of Ryan's secrets to really get value out of data science.
Takeaway number three. We all know that machine learning is great for personalized recommendations and a technology that's obviously here to stay. But still, many organizations struggle to move from machine learning pilot projects to ML in production. And to change that in your organization, Ryan shared some great places to start. Make data accessible, increase data usage through cloud migration, and automate the data access process.
Wise words from Ryan. Takeaway number four. Data protection is a true differentiator. You don't need to use personal data in most services. And working with fake users is a great option too.
Indeed. So if any of you business leaders are listening right now, make sure you empower your data scientists to work with good data. And if you don't have a data scientist yet, make sure you hire one with specific domain expertise.
That's the way to go. We hope you found this episode as interesting as we did. See you next time.
And if I may ask our audience real quick, if you could take a moment to give us a review or subscribe to our podcast, especially on Spotify, we'd be most appreciative.
Absolutely. Goodbye.
The Data Democratization podcast was hosted by Alexandra Ebert and Jeffrey Dobin. It's produced, edited, and engineered by Agnes Fekete and sponsored by Mostly AI, the world's leading synthetic data company.